This is Emily Primo, assistant editor of Fraud Magazine, and I'm joined by Chris Ekimoff, a director at FTI Consulting in the forensic and litigation practice in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Can you go over your career path from when you graduated from college to your current position?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's definitely been an interesting road. I don't think that it's something I would have predicted if you asked me 10 years ago where I would be, how I would get to where I am today. But, I think that that's up to some of the things we'll discuss today as well. So I'd originally focused on accounting in high school. I had a business teacher in high school who focused his business classes on accounting, and that was something I really identified with as both a viable career option down the road as well as something that, you know, I was passionate about. And, you know, I can still remember balancing my first 14-column spreadsheet of consolidating entries and eliminating entries at the end of the year for the exercise we were doing and feeling that satisfaction that was there. And I think that that's a specialty that, you know, if you have, that accounting is definitely a focus for you. So I'd gotten involved in went to St. Bonaventure University, which is a small liberal arts college an hour south of Buffalo, New York, as a major in accounting in their dual degree program. So it was a 5-year program with a bachelor's and a master's degree, an MBA in business with a focus in accounting that is tailored towards sitting for the CPA exam. Upon graduating with that, I had had an existing relationship through a leadership conference and a subsequent internship with Deloitte, one of the big four accounting firms. Mm-hmm. And to me, as soon as I got interested in accounting, I saw the long-term benefits is probably the wrong word, but the long-term kind of career options that someone who works for a big four has versus doing some other things. And I wasn't really confident 100% in where I wanted to sit or what I wanted to do. And in a position like that, the Big Four is definitely a place where you can leverage that experience and those skills down the road in a lot of different ways. So getting involved with Deloitte was really key to kind of launching my career in a direction that, you know, where I landed today.
And could you explain a little bit about what it is you are doing today?
Yeah, so as mentioned, I'm in the forensic and litigation consulting group here at FTI, and basically we like to talk about forensic, away from kind of the CSI shows on TV, and really the meaning of the word can be taken as for presentation in the courts. So from a forensic accounting perspective, the work that we do is, almost always tied directly to a court proceeding or a legal case. And working with the financial information that may come up in a lawsuit or in a dispute between business partners or in divorce proceedings or, you know, in financial investigations in general. So as attorneys are developing their cases, looking at pursuing actions, filing motions, anytime there's a clause in those motions or in those briefs that has to do with financial information, they'll often look to experts in that type of information. So I work for the gentleman who will often be testifying experts as well as, consulting experts with attorneys on how to develop their case, how to ask, financial people at companies and in business financial-related questions. The attorneys are very well studied in the law but may not have spent as much time in the details of accounting, the details of general ledgers that may come up in a case. So we're often in that position to help guide the trial, guide the briefs, work with the attorneys on how to best word or explore different avenues and really understand their case to a whole new level. So for me, kind of the lead-in going back again to the early days is I had always been interested in the FBI. I thought chasing bad guys was a great thing to do. And that's kind of what took me down the accounting path, knowing that there's a lot of financial investigation on the law enforcement side. But as I explored my career, I realized that there were, more opportunities that interested me outside of law enforcement than inside. And I kind of, scratched that itch with the litigation support work I do now. The people who serve in our law enforcement are very well suited for that and of a great attitude to meet those demands. And that's not something that I could see myself doing or having the ability to do as well as they did. So to me, it was much more of that focus on the courtroom and the legal side of things to understand how we could best, serve the client and in some cases with the cases I've worked on, society as a whole.
So would you say that's basically how you became interested in the fraud fighting profession.
Definitely.
Marrying the two, the accounting with the litigation side.
Exactly. And a lot of times on the cases I work in my current position, we will be asked to do, a kind of a clandestine or an unknown to the company investigation. Firms like FTI and others will be hired by boards of directors or executives to review the actual work product of people or their activity to see if are they embezzling money, are they improperly performing the review of their expenses that they should be doing. And so from that side, that's definitely a fraud-related idea. But other times, we'll be in cases that are much less fraud-focused and on who's interpreting this stipulation in the contract correctly, who's accounting for this under the right manner. And oftentimes there may be some inklings of fraud there, some inklings of, subversive activities. But, oftentimes it's either a misunderstanding or something that's tossed up to the court as well. So it kind of sits on those two sides of the fraud coin, if you will.
What challenges did you face along the way, getting from college to where you are now?
The main focus when I was thinking about those challenges is definitely being able to identify the seat you want to be in down the road and how to get there. There are a lot of opportunities for people who start out, say, in public accounting in the audit profession that people in litigation support and in fraud investigation sometimes aren't viewed in the same attitude or with the same experience or skills that an auditor has, and that's 100% true. I've never worked a busy season on a publicly filed client from an accounting perspective or an audit perspective in my career. So there are certain things that I'll never be tagged for, that I'll never be tasked with, that I'll never have the ability to respond to, whether in the courtroom or an investigation, with the same amount of confidence that someone who spent a portion of their career in audit will be. So I think from a challenge perspective, that perception and that actual skill set is something that I don't have, but can be augmented and facilitated in a lot of different ways too. The background and challenges on that side. I remember having a conversation with my dad when I had first started out at Deloitte, and a senior manager had approached me and said, we have two projects that we're going to start next month, and we'd like you to choose what you're going to be on. And I called my dad and told him about the basics of both of the projects and how I really didn't know what to do and I didn't want to pick the wrong one. And I have his quote here that I keep with me, and it says, even if you pick the wrong project, you'll have at least 40 more years in your career to make up for it. So knowing that you have those options and opportunities sometimes can seem like a challenge, and you don't want to make the wrong choice, but knowing that your time horizon may be a little bit longer to rectify it can be good. Just to keep going on the challenges question, one of the things that's tougher per se in the litigation support and forensic accounting realm is you're often working on a variety of cases at the same time. Three, four, five, six different matters will be happening concurrently. Staying organized is definitely a huge part of the job that is, a constant challenge, as court dates are constantly updated and changed, and requirements for types of filings that are going to be produced for the court or deliverables that you're providing the attorney clients that you have. Those things are, you got to be a diligent list maker. You got to use the technology functions at your fingertips and that you're comfortable with, whether that's, reminders and Outlook or keeping a little book with you like I do and just writing everything down that anyone says to you, just so you have a record of it. So keeping track of that is definitely a key challenge in anyone's career as they develop, but especially in the litigation support side.
Based on those challenges you faced or other challenges that maybe you didn't mention here, what advice could you give others just starting in their careers?
So I do spend a portion of my time working as both a formal advisor to staff here in my position now, as well as working with different groups outside, whether it's the ICPA or the ACFE, to provide some kind of informal mentorship. And I always use the same three ideas when I talk to people. The first is ask questions. When you're starting out in your career, you have to know that you don't bring an understanding, as an in-depth understanding as the people you're working with. when you're the most junior person on the engagement, or when you're the youngest person in the office, or it's your first week at work. And I always say, ask questions to the point of annoyance. You know, you don't want to self-filter and say, I don't want to appear that I don't know what's going on. I don't want to be perceived as being annoying, so I'm just not going to speak up. It's much more important to speak up and be told to, you know, I'm, you know, as a senior or as a manager, hey, I, you know, we'd love to catch up on this. I'm going to need about an hour or two to get what I need to get done. Come back to me when you can. You know, that's a productive conversation. The first time you have it, you may walk away and say, oh, man, you know, I just got sent out of that person's office because I was too talkative. But, you know, responding to that at the later time when you guys have agreed to meet and discuss it is definitely a key point early on in your career. And that's how you really get to understand things and build a relationship with the people you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Secondarily, and two and three kind of work together. Number two, I always say, is to make those choices. You know, it can be hard, especially in the fraud-fighting world. You know, you can just look at the ACFE's fraud tree to see all the different kinds of fraud and types of specializations you can get into and different jobs and positions within companies that have a fraud focus to them, and just say, I don't know what to pick. You know, I'm interested in all of this. You know, not being able to really identify you know, a path you want to walk or a choice that you're going to make can come back to hurt you. So I'm very much a trial and error type guy. And I think that, you know, if you look at the positions I've held over the past, you know, better part of a decade, you can see that I, you know, don't sit still if things aren't, you know, of interest to me or going in a direction that I think I'd be interested in. And you know, I've taken a couple positions where I said, you know, that was a great choice when I made it, and this is a great project to be on, and I'm glad that I'm here, but, you know, I know that this isn't going to be the end all for me. I'm not going to keep moving down the same path, so now it's time to pivot again. I have a friend of mine who, you know, I'd sit down and talk with a bunch about our careers. He's a little bit junior to me in the forensic accounting world, and he had a conversation with me when he was thinking of changing positions and saying, oh, you know, I'd really like to work in government. You know, I'd really like to have a position at a government agency where I'm, you know, playing the auditor role or looking at, you know, helping a government agency spend its money wisely. And, you know, I listened and we talked about that a little bit, and then the conversation turned again. He said, you know, but it would be really good to, you know, take part in a major investigation and be a part of something like that maybe a commercial firm or, you know, a Fortune 500 company would do internally. I think that would be really great, and that would be really interesting. And so, okay, we talked a little bit about that as well. And then he said, you know, well, you know, I really miss kind of that accounting background that I started with too, so it would be great to get back into public accounting and to focus on, you know, helping the public markets from an accounting perspective. And I stopped him and I said, you know, you just walked through three different things that are completely different that you're very interested in. And he said, yeah, they all do sound good. And I said, well, you got to make that choice. You know, you have to sit there and say, I understand that all of these things are interesting to me, but I'm going to do, you know, the government job. I want to explore government jobs right now. And maybe in 3 or 4 years, you say, that was the decision I made and it's not something I want to do anymore. I'd like to go do something else. So making those choices, I think, is really important to a young, you know, a young CFE or a young person interested in forensic accounting and in fraud investigation, because, you know, you can sit on your hands for as long as possible and never get picked for that job or take up that investigation because you're too nervous about, you know, picking the wrong thing. And then kind of my third piece of advice is always to be fearless, you know, and that sits on the passion side too. You know, you got to speak up when you're interested in something. You have to represent yourself honestly when you're excited and, you know, honestly when you may not be as excited to work on a project as well, and not be afraid of, you know, appearing a certain way to people. You know, it's always better to work with a staff or a manager who's honest with you and says, hey, this is who I am. You know, this is a project I'm very interested in, so I'm going to go crazy on it, and I'm going to be talking about it 24/7, and I'm going to be focused on it 24/7. And if that doesn't work out, then we'll try to adjust it down the road instead of, you know, trying to be the high school kid, right, who doesn't really care about anything, or it's not cool to care, I guess, is the best way that, you know, you can think about some of those attitudes. So feeling that passion and that enthusiasm and not being afraid to represent it to other people, I think is the best way to align yourself with your career choices down the road.
What qualities do you have that you also see in other fraud fighters?
When you're dealing in the arena of fraud, you are almost always focused on the confirmation or the refusal or refuting a hypothesis or a set of circumstances. So a board of directors comes to you and says, we think our CFO is, you know, cooking the books to pump up his stock options. He's improving performance with journal entries at the end of the year that makes us think that, you know, he's booking these things just so the stock price goes up and just so he can, you know, have a second, third, fourth home or yacht or whatever it is. Coming into that scenario from an outside perspective, you know, we call it the devil's advocate mindset. You lay out all of the facts and circumstances in front of you, and you say, here's what I think the story is. How could I be wrong? Being able to ask that question intelligently, dispassionately, you know, focused on the key cruxes of your case is of the utmost importance when you're dealing with potential fraud or you know, confirmed fraud that needs to be proved. You have to have a rock solid story because there are dramatic legal implications and reputational implications to ever, you know, confirming or suspecting someone of fraud. You know, you, obviously there are jail sentences as long as 150 years in some cases, as well as, you know, if a CFO gets labeled or has rumors of embezzling or cooking the books in that manner, it's going to be very hard for them to get a job in financial services ever again. So being able to step back from, you know, the fervor and the focus of your case and say, how could I be wrong? You know, for me, that came into play. I was doing an investigation for a company who had gotten a tip-off from one of their third-party marketing vendors that the marketing manager in-house at the company that was working with this vendor had been abusing the expense account related to that that marketing account. So we spent 6 weeks going over every expense, every invoice from the company, you know, every interaction that this individual, this marketing account manager had with the vendor, and pieced together a story and dollar values and, you know, every kind of circumstance that happened along the way. And, you know, the final meeting, you know, the attorneys met with the subject of the investigation, the individual, and said, you know, here's what we believe happened. We received this tip from this vendor that you've been working with. You know, here's all the transactions that we think are, you know, questionable. We'd really like to understand better, you know, why this has happened and how it's happened, and maybe even pose to you, you being them talking to the subject of the investigation, you know, how could we ever make this better? How can we get back to the place that we need to be, both with you and with the vendor? And explain to him again that the vendor had told us about this. And the individual turned back to the attorneys and said, well, all of those dollar values are exactly right. Everything that, you know, all the facts and circumstances you have are absolutely correct except for one. And the attorney said, you know, that, oh, it sounds like we're on the right page, but what are you talking about? And he said, the vendor has actually been telling me to charge all of this through their account. They've actually been telling me to, you know, manipulate these things in certain ways and that they would take care of it. So the attorneys were kind of walked down that path with him and tried to understand better. It turns out that this marketing vendor ended up losing a renewal of their contract with the company and decided to turn their scorn onto the individual and say that this marketing manager is the problem. He's been running us all up, and we're debating litigation or courtroom action based on not winning this contract. We feel we've been treated unfairly. So their story that they had spun that started this whole investigation and all of this work that we had done was completely fabricated in an attempt by this company to, you know, abuse their position and their marketing manager to put themselves in a better scenario. So the entire, you know, focus of our work had been flipped on its head. And that's where having that devil's advocate mindset, that how can I be wrong mindset, we were 100% on with the transactions in question, the numbers, the issues, but we didn't have the right understanding of the fact pattern. And so that's where you walk into that conversation with the subject of the investigation and you say, help me understand this. You know, you don't walk in and say, we know it. Here it is on paper. We have this. You know, this expense is incorrect. You know, we can see here that it's been edited and changed. Therefore, we know that, you know, that this is an issue and we're going to take you to jail now. There's much more of that kind of collaborative and understanding focus of that case. So being able to step back and identify the weak points or the less clear points in an investigation like that is definitely, you know, a huge quality that you need to see. You can't drink from the Kool-Aid that you're making as you're doing these investigations, because oftentimes there's a lot of things that, you know, are outside your control or that you have no idea of, like it was in that case.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sitting with us and chatting today.
Oh, of course. It's been great.
This is Emily signing off. You can find all of our podcasts at acfe.com/podcast.